So,
hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Do you want to reintroduce yourself? Because people won't recognise you.
Really? Really?
Yeah, really.
My name's Sarah.
And Sarah, what do you do?
So I work at Somewhere House as a support worker. And I also work for the charity, which I love, doing the coffee mornings and writing grants. So, yeah, I keep very busy.
Amazing.
And it doesn't feel like, was it a year ago that we last did this?
Yeah.
That's it was crazy. It must be coming up to a year.
Yeah, it is. It's got to be.
Yeah.
Right. We've got a very noisy dog in the background. I am going to text Mandy and ask her to come and get her. So
you go for it.
Go for it.
So what have you been up to in the last year?
So last year's been quite busy, actually. So I moved in to my own place on my own, which I never thought would be possible.
Amazing.
I always thought I'd have to live with someone. But that's been amazing. I've been on a bit of a health kick, as you can tell.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've transformed yourself.
Yeah. It's been a long time coming. I think I was saying to you before, weren't I, the whole food thing.
Yeah.
It's probably, for me, been around forever. Whether that kind of from a very young age, like overeating. I remember kind of sneaking downstairs to get food and all of that. I suffered with bulimia for years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So food's always kind of been a big issue for me. And when I got into recovery, I think they call it like the recovery belly, don't they? I turned to food, but the other way.
Okay.
And was just eating constantly. So I'd put on, I think, 6.5 stone.
Wow. Do you want to describe to people what bulimia really is? Because people get very mixed up with anorexia and bulimia, yeah, and they don't kind of understand that whole, and then that bit about the replacement addiction to food, if you see what
I'm saying. So for me, how it played out was that I would literally eat a lot very, very quickly, and then I would make myself sick.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Like, so I'd almost get enjoyment out of eating whatever I wanted to eat, which was probably in the form of chocolate. Or like really fatty foods, but very quickly. And then I'd get like pleasure of knowing that I could then get rid of it all straight away. And that went on for years and years.
Really?
So yeah, it was almost like an addiction itself. I believe that food was probably my first addiction. Yeah.
And what's the difference between that and anorexia?
Well, anorexia is the other way where you just don't eat at all. Yeah. So.
And what's that born from? All of those, that eating disorder?
For me, it gave me a form of comfort and control. Speaking to the microphone, shall I say it
again? That's right, yeah.
Comfort and control, really.
Of what?
Of my emotions. It was like I could control something.
Yeah.
Food was massively a way of me kind of just giving myself, I don't know, comfort maybe that I didn't get or have. And as a way of then, I couldn't not eat, but then I didn't like how I was becoming. So like I got diagnosed many years ago with like body dysmorphia. So there was that bit around I couldn't even bear to like look at myself.
Right, okay.
And I remember once doing a one-to-one where I had to look in a mirror and it was like I don't want to be able to look at myself at all.
Wow.
So yeah, but then kind of going the other way. And then constantly eating, it was almost like, how big can I get? I know it sounds crazy. Sometimes people are like, well, just don't do it. It's not that easy.
But yeah. That's the distorted thinking that comes with it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people don't examine that whole thing about looking at the distorted thinking and the links to distorted thinking and the addiction. Because having bulimia is a form of addiction in the same way as anorexia is a form of addiction, the same as taking drugs is a form of addiction and alcohol, etc. But it's that dynamic where you know damn well that actually you look in the mirror and actually you see not a very nice person. No. You don't see the image that you want to do. But also when you look at your life, you also don't like what your life's about. So it's that whole mixture of, it's a whole kind of mixing bowl, isn't it, of emotions and experiences.
Yeah. And I think the last year, my life has transformed so much. And especially around, you know, I've done a lot of work on self-care and a lot of work on self-love through therapy. And for the first time in my life, as long as I can remember, I really feel like I've got a grip on it now.
And how have you got a grip on it? Because, you know, you have lost a substantial amount of weight.
Yeah.
And you look amazing.
Thank you.
You just
still struggle with that, but thank you. Yeah. I I mean, I've done a lot of work with it, and I know we spoke a lot. It was me finding my balance with it. So whether that be through the exercise I do, because I'd be extreme. I'd be like, right, I'm going to the gym every day. I don't even like the gym.
Yeah.
And I'd set myself up to fail every time. And I found my way of exercise now, whether that be, you know, this morning I just danced to 3 songs in my house because I love that and I love dancing. And that's my way of kind of meditating, exercising, and I do little mini workouts in my front room because actually going out and doing it, I put added pressure on myself and I'll struggle with other people maybe judging me.
Yeah.
So I get to do it in the comfort of my own home.
Yeah.
Food, I try and tell myself that I'm not on a diet.
Okay.
I try and tell myself I'm eating healthier foods and that's what I do. And for me, I have to do it my way. So like in the mornings, that's when I kind of get the goodness in me, whether that be through fruit, whether that be through honey, bits like that. So I find I have to start my day off well.
So what does a typical day diet look like now?
So for me, a typical day would be in the morning, I'd have my fruit, I'd have my honey. For lunch, I'd normally have like tuna and like flatbreads, or sometimes I'll have sourdough and hummus and sweet corn. And in the evenings, because that's where I struggled the most, in the evenings, I'll have like the same kind of meals, but I change them when I want to change them. So whether that's like a piece of chicken and some sweet potato and veg. And for me, the worst part of my day was the evenings when I'd feel really lonely or when my head started going a bit crazy. That's when I would gorge on the foods. That's stopped. If I want a snack or something sweet, I'll have it at lunchtime.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's almost like I tell myself at nighttime is a no-go with certain foods. And also there's certain foods that I won't go near.
Okay.
Because I know that if I have it, a bit like when I took drugs, yeah, if I have it, it will set off that kind of phenomenon. So like pizza is a bad food for me because I know if I have pizza, that's it. And at work, I struggle on a Friday because we do gratefuls where people bring cakes in and make them. And I'm like, oh God. So yeah, it's still there. Like my truth is, I think it will always be there, a part of it. Not obsessional as much, but there's still that obsession there.
Yeah. But it's a tremendous amount of willpower that you've mustered up to try and...
I couldn't even get to my shoes. That's the truth. I remember trying to get to my shoes and I couldn't get to them. Or walking upstairs and like not being able to breathe properly.
Yeah.
Or going out for a walk and having aches in my back and my knees. And that's all gone.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. The transformation is, yeah, when you walked in a minute ago, I was like, who's that?
I did say to Mike, you're not going to recognise Sarah when she comes in. So how much have you lost?
So all in all, 6.5 stone.
So where does that fit with your body dysmorphia?
I still really struggle. So yes, I feel amazing I've lost the weight, but my truth is I still really struggle when I look in a mirror. Like I can like really... I think facially, like I can really struggle with that stuff still. It's better. It is better, but it's still there.
Have you tried that
thing?
I cringe
when people say, look, mate, all of that. I'm just like, oh.
You just got to accept it.
I know, but I'm proud of myself. I think the biggest thing is I'm proud of myself that I did it.
Yeah.
Because I've been trying for a long time.
It's really
to
good.
Get a grip of it.
Have you tried that thing where you get 6 stone and you try and carry it around with
no.
you?
No.
I always remember I went to this networking meeting years ago, and there's this guy who'd lost a similar kind of weight, actually, about 6 stone. And he came in with these bags and he did his little stand up and he was like, I've lost this much weight. And he got people to like hold it, and it was ridiculously heavy. And you're thinking your body, your legs, your muscles, your heart was carrying all of that weight, and it huge kind of visual representation of what changed.
We've just come back from holiday, and one of the things that was really noticeable in airports in particular were people who were so overweight that they had to have a wheelchair to get to and from the aeroplane, and they just were unable to be independent. You don't get that big because you're happy.
No.
Necessarily. I mean, I know some people choose, and you know, but are you happy when you can't get yourself to the bathroom or you can't reach your shoes or you feel embarrassed to go out and stuff like that?
And I think that's embarrassed to go out buying dresses that are just like tents. And I'm not here to say that people have to be a set. That's not what this is about. This is my journey. You know, I know plenty of people that are bigger and happy. But for me, I knew that my eating and the amount I was eating, especially in the evenings, was a form of self-harm.
Yeah.
Because it was a form of like I'd replaced one thing for something else. And it's that once I started, I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
And actually, what's that about? You know, there's only so long you can do that for. You know, more people die of like heart disease and stuff like that than anything else. So,
and that's related to what you eat. What you put in is going to create that.
And it's all of it. It's just like trying to drink more water. I used to be like a cactus. I think I'd drink like one glass of water a day, if that.
And what do you do now?
Quite a lot in the morning.
Yeah.
But that's what, you know, some people say, should you do it all in? But I had to find my way that works. Yes. And I know when I wake up in the morning, I have to have my morning routine right.
And how many glasses of water do you drink
in the morning? I have 3 glasses of water in the morning.
Right. I always have a glass of water. Do you?
Yeah, I drink quite a lot of water. And I drink a lot of water throughout the day, to be honest. I'm a bit of a, what's the opposite of a cactus? I don't really know. But I'm the opposite of a cactus. I drink a lot of water all day long. And do you know what, one of the things I've noticed recently, if I go out for a meal, a friend or something, I go to the toilet a lot more than anyone else. But I think it's because I drink so much water all day. I've always got a bottle in my car. Wherever I go, I come here and you know I drink a lot. And yeah, wherever I go, I'm constantly drinking, which is good, as long as it's water and not other things.
See, I drink water and tea and coffee throughout the day, so I kind of accumulate it. But every morning I get up and I have a glass of water before I have anything else in my system. I just think it feels healthier. And but perhaps I'd quite like to drink a bit more water in the morning, but I'm just a bit, I'd get into the cup of tea then. Dave makes a cup of tea and we're gone then. Yeah, it's tea and coffee throughout the day.
I do love a coffee.
I like a cup of tea. I like coffee, but only one a day. Tea is my thing.
You don't really drink coffee. What
I do at home. I normally have one a day from my machine, but that's it. I don't really drink much else. It's tea. I love tea. I can drink tea one after the other, constant. If I'm working from home, I could probably drink 15 cups of tea.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. I can't drink. I couldn't consume that much.
I wasn't always on the toilet.
That is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So coming back to what we're talking about eating disorders and stuff like that, where does, in your opinion, what do you feel is actually the cause of body dysmorphia? What's the cause of addiction in your experience? You're looking at me as if to say, please don't ask me that question. actually have to answer.
No, I know I will answer because it's a hard one. So I always think, is it nature, is it nurture addiction? You know, some of my stuff is learnt habit, trauma. You know, when I think back to being young, there was never really a healthy approach to food anyway. So, you know, like people talk about getting meals cooked and all that I didn't, for me personally, I didn't experience any of that kind of stuff. And it's weird, like people laugh at me today, even when I bake a cake, I do the one where you add an egg. I'm getting better. Okay. So
you're still getting out of a packet.
Yeah. I'm getting better at it. But yeah, there was never that kind of experience of like cooking and that. And I suppose when I'd learned that I could kind of maybe be a bit sneaky with the eating, there was that kind of control and almost that kind of like it was for me. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. To me, it does.
It was like, oh, this is something I can do.
You're in control. It's your freedom.
Yeah, I'll do it. I've got control of this. And, you know, I can, what's the word, visibly remember the first day I made myself sick. You know, I think I must have been about 11.
Oh, wow, I was really young.
Yeah, and it's when I had a McDonald's. And it sounds mad, but the thought came into my head, I could just get rid of this. And it got me quite quickly, just like drink and drugs did. And it was literally a form of control, and it becomes habitual. Then, you know, it's something that people don't really like talking about. It become quite secretive. Yeah.
But that's addiction as well.
Absolutely.
And I think that bit where you link it to kind of almost the dysfunctional family type stuff. And I loved your bit about the normalizing food and that kind of stuff. And I know I've had a similar background to you. So, and I found one of the things that's been really, really important to me is to have, we all sit down and eat together. Even like last night, Dave and I sat at the table, laid the table up, sat, you know, I presented a meal and blah, blah. And my children all cook. They've all had really good relationships with food. Some probably worse. One of my children have had a bad relationship with food, but they've got a good relationship with food, as in they can cook, they know what it is to have a family meal, they know how important it is to do that, all of that kind of stuff. And I think that's that priority. Whereas in the past, I didn't. If I wanted food, I used to have to steal from it.
Yeah. And I think for me, like my truth as well is when my body's a certain size, it's almost like a back off.
Like a defense mechanism.
Like a defense mechanism. Yeah. There's that whole like, if I get bigger, it's like, don't come near me kind of thing.
People won't fancy me and they can
avoid that. Yeah, I don't even have to go near, like, and that's the truth. The men bit, like, does my body become someone else's body?
Yeah.
And it's, I've had to learn, actually, this is me. Yeah. I'm in this body for life. This is my face for life.
Yeah.
And I've had to learn to kind of love my body as much as I can and my face for me.
So standing in others. Front of a mirror now.
Do you remember when you made me do that?
I get blamed for that. Okay, I'll own it.
Thank you. I still struggle. I can still pick out all the
faults.
Yeah, but better.
That's good. That's progress, right?
Yeah. Will it ever be perfect? What is perfect? I think most people struggle with it in some degree.
It's a pivotal moment, though, isn't it? When you actually got to stand there and look at yourself. And I do that quite a lot in a lot of the work that I do, both with staff and clients and various other bits and pieces. But that bit where you go, just look in the mirror. Because very often we don't do that. We don't get the opportunity to just take those moments and go,
friend of mine was telling me the other day about a program that she's become a bit addicted to. And I think, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's something like My 600 Pound Life.
Oh, yeah.
You know that show?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on TV, and it's about this this doctor in America who basically meets these people who are enormous. I mean, 600 pound is, I don't even know what that is in stone. That's got to be, what, 40 stone?
I think it's about 45 stone.
Yeah, that's a lot. These massive people, and people travel from all over America to go and see him to solve their problem. And she was, I haven't watched the program yet. I really want to. But she was telling me that some of the stories these people come up with as to why they're the size they are. And, you know, quite often they're having to be brought there in the backs of pickup trucks because, you know, they can't sit in a normal car seat and things like that. And what he does is he sets them these very strict diets, these 1,200 calorie a day diets. And, you know, they're supposed to lose something like 50 pounds a week. You know, it's a huge amount of weight because of the size they are. And they have to do these exercises, which quite often are just, you know, raising your leg whilst laying in bed type thing. Because most of these people can't walk because they're too massive. And, a lot of people, when they go back after, I think it's 12 weeks of that first session, you know, some of them have put weight on.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, some of them have only lost like a couple of pounds. And he says to them, you know, what have you been eating? And they turn around and go, well, your diet. I cheated a little bit, they say. You think, that's just not possible. No. You cannot maintain that weight by eating, you know, eating 1,200 calories. And I always remember this, there's this meme that I keep seeing on Instagram where I think it's a clip from that TV show where there's this woman going, I'm starving. I've not eaten anything for 3 days. And the doctor says, well, you've had a salad here and a salad there. And the woman goes, yeah, but that's, you know, that's not real food. I don't eat that kind of food. And he says, well, you're not starving. You've ate enough. And he said something like, you've ate enough for 500 people to last them a month. You're not starving. And she just looks at him in disgust. Yeah. And it's really quite funny. It's sad because there's clearly a story there that's made them become that way. But it just becomes perpetual when you can't take a grip of it and try and you know, move forward and do the diet and do the exercise and try and change your life. You either want to change or you don't.
And I think there comes the point, like for me, it was like I remember struggling to get into a size 20. And I'd almost told myself, what's the point? I think when you get to a certain size, there's almost that defeated bit. And it's like, no, come on. Come on. But it is sad because I've seen that program. I've seen people that are going to go for surgery and then have passed away beforehand.
Yeah.
Because their heart can't take it.
And the thing that's related to that, though, it's not just your heart. So, you know, that people that are overweight, don't eat properly, don't have a healthy, balanced diet, they are more likely to have a stroke. They're more likely to get dementia than somebody that eats healthily and has regular exercise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I must admit for myself, because my job's very much a sitting down job, I'm either talking with somebody or somebody's talking to me, obviously, or I'm sat on a desk. And I struggle to get, say, my 10,000 steps in for the day. And it's like, it bothers me. You know, it really bothers me that I can't achieve that in the day. So it's like, but some people don't even have that understanding of that, do they?
No. And I think that's the bit when you talk about where it's come from. I never had that, do you know what I mean? That understanding, that kind of how to look after yourself. So I have to give that to myself today.
How do you educate yourself? Because, you know, I know how I've educated myself, but how have you educated yourself to do that? Because I think that's another thing, you know, people that may listen to this may think, well, it's all very well you saying that, but I don't know how to do that. People don't understand that.
I think for me, though, my journey won't be the same as everybody else's journey is going to be. But I had to, you know, I went into an environment where we had to eat 3 meals a day. And sit with people. I mean, a lot of my eating was done secretly.
Yeah.
Okay. So the thought of having to sit with people whilst eating was quite a big challenge in itself. Yeah. Okay. And learning not to kind of, you know, pile it on the plate. So eating 3 meals a day, learning about food, however people do that, it's learning about food. You know, there's information out there, you know, online, you know, doctors can help. And, you know, I had to be in an environment where we had to exercise every day, you know, getting sleep. So I was taught how to manage that whilst in treatment.
So it's re-educating.
Re-educating myself on it. You know, and at the time, the truth is I wasn't ready to do any of that. But, you know, for me, I had to get myself into a place where, well, I suppose a bit like when I was using, you know, for me, my journey was one of almost having to get to rock bottom in such a bad state that I had to do something about it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's been a pattern for me and not everyone has to do that.
But is that...
That's my truth. That's what had to happen.
But that then comes back to that bit about what is addiction. Is it addiction? Is it not addiction? Because people very often get quite defensive around eating disorders.
I think it's an addiction.
Well, no, I concur with you.
I do.
And I think it should be treated as addiction.
Yeah.
Shoving somebody in a hospital, sticking a tube in their arm, up their nose and down their throat and stuff doesn't actually deal with the fundamental problem of why are you starving yourself or why are you overeating? Because actually I think very often, and I don't know what your feelings are about this, very often it's the anorexic that will get the attention almost or the treatment, and it's the bulimic person that doesn't, because they are it's that kind of undercurrent people.
Yes. Isn't it? Hidden, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a hidden. Yeah. Yeah.
And also when people are really big, it's almost like that judgment part.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, might being huge, it's like, well, just diet.
Yeah. Get over yourself.
Get over yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Do something about it. Actually, that's just as damaging.
Yeah.
That, the bulimia, the anorexia, all of it.
Yeah.
you know, behavioural addictions are a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, the drink and the drugs, there is the treatment out there. Okay, and it's quite easy with those. Do not pick up a drink, do not pick up a drug.
But you've got to eat.
But you've got to eat.
Yeah.
Or whether it's a shopping addiction, which, you know,
might still. You've got that too.
Yeah, or addicting to people, you know, all of that behaviourally stuff, you've still got to do that to some degree.
Yeah.
Drinking drugs easy, don't pick it up.
Yeah.
Look at why you picked it up in the first place, learn other coping mechanisms. And normally I found with most addicts in recovery, it's the behavioural stuff that might still be there that takes longer to work on. I'm just really grateful today that I've been able to look at it all.
It's the wider picture, well, isn't it?
Yeah. And extremes, isn't it? That's addiction, isn't it? Yeah. One way or the other.
Yeah. I went to see what's her name? Amy Winehouse film.
Did you?
Yeah. It's really sad. Mm. You look at it and you think, but, you know, if you look, you attach addiction to eating. She had an eating disorder way before it looks like she had an eating disorder way before she had an addiction to alcohol and then drugs. Yeah. And everything else. And it's just so sad to see that. And also another program that I watched was, I fell upon it on Netflix, which was Something Fat, it's called. And it's about Fat Club or something like that. And that, which I as you know, I'm not overly keen on that. But I found the dynamics watching that. It's funny. It's a comedy. Wow, does that kind of highlight the addiction, but also the shaming that people give you and how righteous people can be when they're a size 8 and they look stunning. And in actual fact, what they don't realize is what's going on for you. You might be a size 10 and everybody says, oh, you don't need to lose weight. You look great, whatever. But it's that internal conversation that happens.
Yeah. You know, that's that. If you are bigger and people are judging you, your feelings are not going to be great. And it's just,
Yeah, it's keep going.
It's a minefield, the food stuff. It really is.
One of the things that they had on this slimming, it's like a slimming club thing. This woman in the slimming club did like medals. She gave medals to people who'd done well. They lost like 3 pounds or whatever. And the one that had put on weight, she went to give her a piggy.
No.
And she, this woman, I mean, the character was brilliant. She just said, no, I will not wear that, etc. But you think, how can you put that together? How can another human being do that to another human being? You know, but that's really, she's representing a lot of what how society says. You know, like the lady in the wheelchair who can't actually walk because she's so overweight. You don't look at it and think, well, stop eating. You look at it and think, it's just sad.
Sad, it is sad.
You know, that perception, society's perception can be she's a greedy bitch or he's a greedy pig or whatever you want to call them. Whereas, you know, truthfully, it's just sad that they can't seem to manage that.
And it is a difficult one, isn't it? Because society says how people should look. And young people today, I don't know how they cope. I don't know how I would have coped, you know, with all the social media and being able to change the way you look on your phone and just wanting to be anything other than the way you look, it's worrying. I don't know how I would have survived with the technology these days.
Well, interestingly, I went into a shop to buy, I've got a favourite shop that I go into, and I went into this shop while I was away, and I went to try on a pair of shorts, and the girl, the young lady that was serving me, I said, because I always get confused with their sizing. And I say, what size do you think it is? Well, she said, I think it'll be this size. So she gave me this pair of shorts that literally I put them on and they fell off. Okay. And I thought, wow, is that your, but that does, it makes your head go wonky then, doesn't it? So I said to her, please, may I have a smaller pair? She went, really? And you think, your job is not to make me feel uncomfortable or unhappy with my body. Your job is to encourage me. Now, I know that I went to the same shop in another part of the world, and the woman there was like, why are you even looking at that size? You are not that size. That's my perception of myself. You are this size, and you need to get that size on. And she was right. But actually, my similar to you, body dysmorphia, that actually tells me I'm a size this, yeah. I'm this size. But it just goes to show that just that moment in time, one thing that you can say to somebody can actually turn
massive impact.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It is. I still do it now when I buy clothes, go to get bigger sizes, because yeah. My head's still like, oh, because yes, I know I've lost weight, but I still, there's that bit of me like, is it really that much? Yeah.
So what size do you go for now before you actually get the right size?
Well, I'd normally pick up a size 16. Uh-huh. But I'm not sick.
What are you now?
A 12.
Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? It's the concept of that. Yeah. It's like, is that, and I mean, I'm saying this as a woman, and I don't know whether you feel like this is the man, but I don't know what a size 12 looks like, or what a size 10 looks like, or a size, I don't know. I just know that society says to me that I should look that way.
I don't know, what is it like for a man? Are you bothered, or are you listening to us thinking?
I'm sort of listening, thinking, yeah, I, you know what someone's supposed to look like, but not necessarily what that means in terms of size. Sure. So.
But does that put, do you have similar pressures to what we have? Or feel?
I guess so. So I think for men, you know, it's, medium is the correct size, I suppose, in the sense of, you know, small is someone who's you know, too small. Medium is what you should be. Large is okay, and then extra large and so on becomes, yeah, you're way too big. I think that's probably, and then in terms of gene size, I think 32 is what they class as kind of normal,
healthy.
Or healthy. Yeah. So if anything bigger than that, and it's, yeah, so.
It's exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is a bit.
It is. Yeah. It is. It's a whole minefield, isn't it, that we're all dealing with. Yeah. And I think, you know, bringing it today is kind of highlights that bit about, yes, you can recover, but fundamentally there is, it's always there. Mm. And like you were saying, it either comes through social media or a magazine or something, isn't there? There is somewhere a program, something, or, you know, a comment that somebody makes.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing is to, you know, be happy within yourself. That's been the biggest changer, really, is learning to be happy with you. Yeah. I know it sounds really cheesy, but that's why you're kind of giving yourself negative head talk constantly or beating yourself up. It's horrible.
So what's the future hold for you, Sarah?
Well, let's try and maintain this, okay?
Yeah, yeah. Maintenance.
Yeah, maintenance, which can be the hardest bit. Enjoying the job that I do, that I love. Having healthy people in my life. And just enjoying a simpler life. Being content where I am. You know, I've been in only, 3 years now, which just feels insane.
How long did you come for?
I was coming for 4 weeks. That was what I was doing. Yeah. And that internal battle of like thinking I should be living another life or doing this or doing that. And actually it's all right. Today's okay. Like, I don't know what the future holds, but it's all right at the moment.
It's a fantastic achievement, yeah. Really. It's the way to look at it.
Yeah. I wouldn't have thought in the space of a year that I'd be almost working full time. I'd be living on my own. I'd be looking after myself better. I'd have healthy friends in my life, people that love me. I've got two gorgeous nephews who, oh, I've got them back in my life. That's what can make me emotional, that kind of stuff. So it's just building on that, really. Amazing. Only finished my counselling course. I never thought I'd be able to complete a course ever.
What's the which course are you on now?
Level 2.
And then are you going to do level 3?
Potentially.
Why potentially? Nervous that you don't want to do it? Or
just I don't want to do it. That's okay. And I think that's okay as well. You know, is that the line I want to go down?
Yeah. No. I think very often in our kind of life, people get kind of encouraged to go down that path. And I'm not sure it's right. I mean, I never wanted to be a counsellor. It was the last job I wanted to do. Sadly, I'm good at it. So, you know, not sadly, I don't mean that in a negative way, but I discovered that I was good at it. And actually, it was the right path for me to go down. But, you know, truthfully, I don't think it's necessarily the right for a lot of people.
I just love working with other people.
Yeah.
In addiction, I love it.
Yeah.
And it keeps me sane and well, sane as I can be.
No comment. Well, thank you for coming on.
I really appreciate it.
Time has flown on this one.
Yes. How has it gone so quickly?
I don't know. It's all Mike's fault anyway.
So, we'll have you back again soon.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thanks, Sarah.